So, welcome to the next episode of Better Know a Burner. And I'm here with Serpentine Rose. That's her burner name, and we're going to ask her about that. Welcome.
Thank you. Burner. Nice to be here.
So, I think a good way to start this would be to just tell us a little bit about how you got that name. That's very uncommon. Most people, when they think of snakes, they're either scary or
right. All
of the, you know, reptiles are not usually the warm, fuzziest of animals, and so that was an unusual choice.
But if you love them, you love them. It is an unusual name, and it's an unusual way I got the name. So I was actually at our local burn in Asheville called Transform Us, and the very short story is that I was bitten by a copperhead on the ass while peeing at night.
That's great.
Yeah.
Of all places.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, snake medicine is the biggest gift considered from snake medicine is its transformational properties. So that's really interesting too, because it happened at Transform Us.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So you were... You were going to the bathroom and it bit you on the bottom?
Yeah, so I had to go, and I didn't want to go to a porta potty. So it was on Sunday night during the temple burn, and I just squatted in some grass and I felt something, whoop, like a zap. And I thought, oh, I got stung by a bee. And then I felt it again and I thought, no, it must be stinging nettle. And then, I started feeling the building of the pain, and I thought, no, I guess I got stung by a ground nest or something. And then there was a woman standing there, and she said, well, let's take a look. And I pulled up my dress, and we shined the flashlight on my ass, and there were four fang marks.
Oh,
four
twice.
Tiny little triangles. Yeah, he bit me twice, which means you get a full envenomation. Very often, copperheads give a dry bite first, as if to say, go away, you're in my space. And I didn't move fast enough. You know, it's...
peeing on his house.
I was probably just peed on his head or something. I don't know. And, yeah, he got me really good.
Wow. So, did you... The traditional thing is, somebody please! I need someone to suck the poison.
Oh my God, I heard a lot of jokes about why if I had been there, I would have sucked the venom. So I knew that I needed to go to first aid, and I used to work as a medic at that event, and so I knew that I was going to have to go to the hospital. So I made my way. It was really hard to walk and not run to get to the medic area. And... then a girl was taking me to where the ambulance meets you, and she was taking my pulse while driving the golf cart, and she, my pulse was racing. I was, you know, really nervous at this point.
Heart pumping, all the stuff that you don't really want to happen.
Yeah, I never turned around to look back at the snake. I just saw the fang marks, and that's all I needed. Which, you know, in hindsight, I think it's really funny that I never turned around to look at the snake. But, so she's taking my pulse and driving the golf cart, and she says, did you take any drugs tonight? And I said, oh my God, yes, I just ate mushrooms. And I was not tripping yet.
You were about to have a real trip.
And she stopped the golf cart, and she looked right at me and said, sister, snake medicine is the most powerful medicine you can ever be gifted. You're going to be fine. Go with it.
Wow.
And it was just the gentle nudge I needed in the right direction to take that to a place I wouldn't have been able to without. It's a real powerful reminder of our words and how powerful they can be, because right. That really did, I think, transform my experience into a very positive one.
That's awesome. Did you ever find the person who said that?
Yes, I did. And I thanked her and...
give her a shout out.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Stephanie. That was amazing. We'll have to share this with you. And then I did start tripping in the ambulance on the way to the hospital.
Wow.
And it was amazing and beautiful. The most beautiful, vivid, I can still remember how intense and beautiful the bright green geometric shapes and patterns, and it was really awesome. And the woman that was tending me in the ambulance was really cool. She knew, I told her, and she just let me be and let me be in silence as we made our way to the ER. And then I ended up in a Seventh-day Adventist hospital.
Wow. Wow. Well, it's good. It's so many good things happened there. One, that, yeah, it wasn't a total freak-out situation. And two,
yeah,
that I'm sure it was traumatic regardless. Two, that people believed you.
Oh.
Or that it wasn't, everyone else around wasn't so crazy and not paying attention.
Right.
That, hey, I began to be like, oh, she's crazy. She's just tripping. They find you by the campfire the next morning or something.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's a good point.
But that's wild. So, yeah, really a transformist experience at Transformers.
Yeah. And, an interesting thing about that is we had a party, a pirate party at our camp that year, and on the bar there was a paddle that said surrender the booty, and it was BOOTY, booty, you know, like a pirate's
right.
booty, but it was on a paddle, and so the inference was
right.
And I just, you know, I saw that later in a picture of our camp and the bar and the sign that said surrender the booty, and I was like, oh man, maybe we should have had that up there. Power of words again? I don't know.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, one of the reasons that I want to interview you, I mean, when you post things on Facebook a lot of times, they're, you know, generally very wise, and I see the amazing places that you travel and the pictures, and so you're an adventurer. And a wild child, you said, I think, at one point. And so
I am, both of those.
And so I wanted to ask about, you know, how did Rose become Rose? How did you start? Where were you born? Tell us about your mother.
how did I start? Let's
go to the beginning here.
Okay, the beginning. Well, I was born in Jackson, Wyoming, and I love it that I started this journey on Earth in some of the most remarkable mountains on the planet. But I didn't spend much time there, so I was adopted from that point into a family of fundamental Christians.
Wow. Adopted at what age?
2 months.
2 months into a fundamentalist Christian family.
Yes. Very much a cult, really.
You have to tell us about that.
I spent a few different times living in a commune with my family. My parents were not even the mainstream of that religion, which was Seventh-day Adventist. They were part of a much more conservative sect of Seventh-day Adventist that felt like the mainstream Seventh-day Adventist had led everybody astray and were too liberal.
Oh, wow.
So it was an interesting way to grow up. You know, dancing's a sin, fingernail polish is a sin, movies a sin, most things a sin.
Was it like an Amish type place, or what would you compare it to? Give us a visual kind of, what was it like?
Huh. Well, actually, there were a lot of good things. Like, we lived in Northern California in the mountains. They were vegetarian, so, you know, my entire life, health has been at the core of who I am and what I'm thinking about and interests. So that was a gift that they gave me. I wonder if I would be as passionate about that type of thing had I not been raised with that focus. I'm not sure. But
take the good where you find it.
Yeah. There were a few gifts along the way for sure, and then a lot of stuff to get over. Take a lifetime.
So, where did you go to school? What did you learn in school?
Seventh-day Adventist schools. I was actually K kicked out of one school in high school. And at the time I was kicked out of school, I was actually a really good kid. No sex, no drugs, no alcohol.
Rock and roll.
There was that. Yeah. I had found that. That was the first thing.
Okay, well, see, there you deserved it. Yeah. Already down the footloose path.
Right, yeah. I feel like my life was kind of footloose, actually. And, it's not a very typical way to grow up.
No.
Especially with my spirit, okay? That's the important thing to remember, I think, is that I came to this world with a spirit of someone not of that world. I mean, my parents chose it, but I was born with a rebellious nature and a spirit to ask questions of everything and not really trust what someone's telling you to be the truth. That's just who I am.
I think that's one of the beauties of just having a different, you had a totally different perspective, and so you're able to come in to the modern world with it and see the good and the bad and maybe, you know, from a different viewpoint. And that comes through in a lot of the things that you say and post and all of that.
Are you familiar with the Enneagram?
No.
No. Well.
Are you talking about the, no, tell me.
It's a personality typing similar to Myers-Briggs, but I'm a 9 on the Enneagram. And one of the things that a 9 brings is the ability to see both sides. Also, okay. So that's funny that you said that.
Yeah, well, I perceived that. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, the Myers-Briggs, I don't remember what I am. I've taken it a couple of times, and it always seemed fairly accurate to me.
Yeah.
Same with other people.
Oh, I wonder what you are with the Enneagram.
Yeah, I'll have to figure that out.
Definitely.
Next podcast. as a teenager, at what point did... Obviously, that you separated from that. So tell us what transformous experience led to your break from that life, and what were the implications? I mean, are you still friendly with your family? And
yeah, so
you have brothers and sisters.
Yes, 2 brothers, and I had many teachers along the way that were, as I look back, you know, it's very much an insular world that you grow up in. And so I had somebody early on, I think I was not even in middle school when I met this woman, Linda. She was our neighbor. She was also a Seventh-day Adventist, but she was a very liberal Seventh-day Adventist. And she saw how different I was from my family. And I mean, when I say different, I mean, I was different. Not only did I look different, but everything about me. I sought out people. I sought connection with people. And we moved around so much. The longest I was ever in one school was 2 years. And I think that only happened one time. But in all of the different places that I lived, I would find a family that I would connect with and that would see me as like, oh my God, what is she? This is so odd that she's with this family. How is it? And they would literally just adopt me, and I would spend all my time with this family. It just happened over and over and over. So I think that's what made me an adaptable human. You could plop me anywhere. I will find friends. I will find my tribe and my community.
That's how you kind of came into our little circle.
It is. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
That's how I met you.
We had a party, and we invited some other burners, and they said, we have a friend named Rose. Can she come too? And, of course, we said, you know, any friend of yours is a friend of ours, and, of course, she's welcome. And then you just showed up without them.
And they didn't even come.
They didn't even come. Yeah.
You're right. I came there not knowing. I'd met Heather before, but yeah.
And
that wasn't intimidating to me at all, because I knew if you were friends of Doug and Flo, you were obviously friends of mine that I just hadn't met yet.
Yes, that's great. That's true.
And I think that goes back to my upbringing, and it's why that's easy for me. Yeah.
I don't know. That was awesome and brave. and maybe not really, yeah, brave in some ways and not really, because you know,
it didn't feel brave.
You know that when you're going to meet burners, you know exactly what to expect.
Yeah.
Even when you don't know what to expect.
Right.
It's always a pleasant surprise in most cases. So. So the, were you going to regular schools or?
No. You had to go to Seventh-day Adventist schools and.
So even the people that you were with, they were just maybe not as far out of the mainstream Seventh-day Adventists as your family. But right. Seventh-day Adventists in general are you know, right. That's pretty, that requires some heavy level of devotion and seriousness.
Oh my God, they're
belief.
So devoted, yeah. And well, on one hand, it's easy because they aren't allowed to question. And so it's just, you know, you don't, if you don't question anything, then everything put before you is what you believe. So
wow.
It's kind of easy, really.
Okay. I didn't think about it that way, yeah. That's interesting. So, all right. So, what was the point where you left? What percentage of, we'll get into that. You know, what did you keep and what did you let go?
Yeah. So when did I leave? Definitely it was a process. And I had a friend who told me about this church. And he said, you won't believe this. And he was an atheist friend. And we used to sit and argue until wee hours about philosophical things and theological, is that the right word?
Theological
discussions. And I would always try and convince him that there had to be a God and that this God was a Christian God. And he told me this church existed. He said, you have to come. You just won't believe it. The minister has an earring and all he talks about is love and acceptance, and there's no creed that you have to believe. I'm like, what are you talking about? So I went with him and his wife one Sunday, and it was the Unitarian Church. And I'd never heard of such a thing. And I was living in South Georgia at the time. So it was kind of a strange thing to stumble upon a group of people that were really outside of the normal box, right? And just...
We were married. My wife and I were married in a Unitarian church.
Oh, so you know.
My mother belonged to one for a while, and I remember wine and cheese parties on Sunday.
Yeah.
It was a little different than the church that I grew up in. Yeah.
They're all about service and love. And I couldn't believe it. I walked in and Cat Stevens was playing. And yes, indeed, the minister had long hair, had an earring in, and all he talked about was love. So for a whole year, I went to that church. And then on Saturday, with my whole family, I would go to the Seventh-day Adventist church. And then after about a year of doing both, the minister said something from the pulpit that was really derogatory about gay people. And I looked at my husband and I said, my children are not going to be raised hearing this. This is crazy. And it was good. It was just a line in the sand that I knew, okay, I'm on this side and I will not raise my children.
Wow.
So, yeah, it took some time. So I was very much an adult before I realized.
How old were you at that age?
So I would have been 27.
Wow. I had no idea. I thought it was early. I thought it was like a teen
no.
rebellion thing that you had.
But I was a bad Adventist, you know, up until that time. That's what I termed that, bad Adventist, right? I would still drink alcohol, smoked weed, did all the things that weren't approved of, right. But... still felt like it was the right thing to do to raise my kids in the church until I realized, oh, no, this is not
it
okay at all.
Right. Not only are they wrong about the occasional sip of wine, they're wrong on the big issues as well.
So. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. But you've had a lot of, you've had a lot of, I guess you had a lot of just religious indoctrination or a lot of the religious side. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I was like, what if, because I'm, we were going to talk about your life and growing up and stuff, and then we were going to get into, I was going to ask you some philosophical questions, because you came from such a different philosophical standpoint or upbringing. It would be interesting to see how you feel about some of the, I have a list of 30 big issues.
Right.
30 deep questions that we'll get into.
Gosh, you know, I change so much. I find myself thinking, okay, this is how I believe. And then another few years down the road, whoa, actually I believe something completely different now. And I think, so we'll see.
Huh. So, so let's see. Let's talk about, let's, before we get into the philosophical stuff, I know that you've traveled a lot, and tell me about your life now. I mean, the places you've been and the things you do. And
I love to travel.
Yeah.
I wish I did more of it, especially international travel. I haven't really done a lot of that lately, but I feel like I'm lucky that I've seen a lot of this country, you know, a lot of the nooks and crannies, national parks, and I seek out beautiful places. You know, natural wonder, that's probably my religion. The state of awe, you know?
I think that's a great way to go. Lisa said that you had, I mean, you had also a number of interesting jobs, so I was going to ask you about that. What have you, what are the jobs that you've done during, or what work have you done during your life?
As an adult? So I did hair for 26 years and really loved that. That was a flexible career when I had kids. I really wanted to spend a lot of time as a mother, staying at home, taking care of kids. And that lent itself really well to that. And then I thought, you know, I don't know if I can see myself doing this when I'm older. And I'll probably have to work forever. So I'll just... How about nursing? And there's something similar with nursing and hair. You know, doing hair, you're interacting one-on-one with people. You're touching them. So it's not like it's a huge leap to go into nursing. And so I've done that. And there are a lot of things that I like about it. And then other things, I don't vibe with Western medicine really as much as I thought I would. But... You know, hospice care is really a passion of mine, something that I like a lot.
Yeah. Did you do that? You did that for a while?
I did that for a while.
Wow. That's trippy. I mean, you know, we don't think a lot about death and really being there. You know, I mean, it's a...
It's powerful.
To be there and to see it. And yeah, we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
So, we don't always think about it as a gift to witness.
Tell me about some of that. I mean, when was the first time that you had someone that you'd cared for that kind of passed away? And...
Right. There was a very powerful person in my life and Stuart's life that passed away as a 51-year-old man, and he was a powerful guy in our community. He started the burn in Asheville called Transformus, and he was just a larger-than-life human, and we got to be with him when he died, surrounding him on his porch, and I feel like it was a witness as to how it should really be done, but how it rarely is done.
Tell me about that.
Well, so he died with all of his closest friends surrounding him. And then we stayed up all night because they're up in the mountains. We couldn't leave him out there with, you know, animals could come and that wouldn't be good. So we decided we have to stay up all night. And we celebrated him with lots of wine and stories and tears and a fire. So here Sid is sitting in the hospital bed out on his porch, sitting up. We put his fishing hat on him. We had a fire right there on the deck and just sat at the foot of his bed laughing and crying and telling stories all night. It was powerful. And then we made his bedclothes. His family did things according to Native American tradition, and which is to bury someone in cotton. You know, nothing artificial, just cotton, and that goes, you know, breaks down into the earth easily. So we made his bedclothes, and in the morning, his men friends wrapped him up in these cotton bed sheets that we had done, tied it up neatly, and then we made a procession up the mountain to his parents' property, where we had a beautiful ceremony walking to the gravesite with drumming and smudging, and then we get to this spot, and his best friends dug his grave.
Wow.
And
right on their on the parents' property.
Right there on the property that he had loved for many, many years. And at one point I was concerned about his daughter, Brittany, who is my goddaughter. She calls me her fairy godmother. And I was looking for her, and then I see her, and she's digging her father's grave, you know, and tears falling in the earth as she does it. And it was just powerful. It's always powerful to me, even when I tell it. It's just, I've never seen death done that way. And it was perfect.
Wow. You know?
And then we laid him in the hole. What a
contrast to the hospice, well, even the hospice where it's the end is done right compared to many places. It's still imperfect in so many ways.
Right.
And then the funeral is really just, you know, some car comes up and they take them off someplace, and you know,
in an airtight waterproof box where you're never going to go back to earth.
Hand the family some ashes and that's it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's beautiful. All right. Here we go. Part two. Serpentine Rose.
You got it.
Got
that's
it.
Me.
So, like I said, when I, you know, when I see some of the things that you post, you tend to post a lot of things that are little words of wisdom and little philosophical things a lot of times. And then just even the comments on, like, photos, just look at the beauty of this or the, you know, the poetry of that. So I'm going to ask some philosophical questions and see what you think.
All right.
The first, do people have free will?
Hmm.
That's one of the, you know, things we're taught religiously.
Yeah.
A lot of religious beliefs. Do people have free will?
Hmm. You know, it kind of comes back to this whole idea of nature versus nurture, but could be tied into that anyway. And I feel like I've had a whole lifetime of studying nature versus nurture. And I feel like I'm very much standing in the nature side of things, because I came to planet Earth through these people, right? And then I was separated from them. And come to find out, I'm a lot like them when being raised in a completely different environment. And so I don't think that I had a choice in the matter to be a rebellious nature or not.
You felt that was what I got in out of what you were saying earlier, because you felt that you had that within you from the start.
Right.
And that you were different, not from the nurture necessarily, that you either went your own way or that way was within you. So that kind of leads to maybe the second question. Yeah, was it, are you how you are because that's how you are, or how do you?
I think it's a combination, but with a very strong leaning toward just who you are as a mass of DNA.
Yeah. I'm on the side of I live as though I have free will, but I have serious doubts that we have free will.
Yeah.
And if we do have it, I think we have a lot less of it than we think we do. I think that that's a little bit of a bummer when you think about it, but I like it because I believe that it allows for a lot of compassion. I think a lot of people that would normally make me angry or that, oh, that look at that person doing this, they shouldn't do that. Usually they're their own worst enemies, and it's kind of like they can't help it. And so I have compassion that sucks to be them, you know?
Right.
Is the attitude that I think kind of works.
That's funny because I think the same, and I often think when I see something that initially I might be inclined to have judgment about, I think, you know, their reality is very different from my reality, and someone could easily be judging my reality in the same way, you know. We're just all here walking our walk.
I'm an agnostic or atheist, but one of the things that I kind of believe with that, if something like that is possible, the only way that everyone could be judged along the same lines was if we don't really have a lot of free will. But maybe the only decision that anybody ever makes in life is to be good or evil. Maybe you all really only have that one choice, and all the other rest of it is just window dressing and bullshit. And
yeah. Evil, but then you have to define that.
Yeah. We'll get into that. So, the next question is, what gives life its meaning?
For me, I believe I find meaning with connection. That's really important to my being. Maybe it is to everybody, but for me, it is especially so, and I think maybe that's because of my early years when I didn't really have a lot of connection to my family that I was raised with. So I've found throughout the years to go out, make that happen, find my connections, and I just feel meaning. You know, if I go to a party and there's a lot of stuff going around, you know, lots of buzz, I could walk away from that feeling drained and exhausted, but if I even connected in a corner with someone for 10 minutes and it felt like a real connection, mm-hmm. I go away feeling completely filled and satisfied.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It was kind of the goal of this was to inject a little bit of knowledge of people into the burn situation.
I like that.
There are people who've been friends for years and years and years, but they really don't know anything other than they'll have conversations about, oh, remember when we did this, or remember when we did that, and we did that. Oh, wasn't that cool? Yes, that was cool. That's it.
Right.
And what does your friend do? Oh, I have no idea. I've known him for 10 years. I have no idea what they do or who they are or what they think about this or that. And, you know,
They must receive their meaning through other means.
Got to scratch the surface.
Yeah, exactly.
Get down below the superficial. So, not to put pressure. So, this is kind of interesting because it gets us back out in the broad world. What are universal human rights?
Universal
human rights. Before you answer that, let's talk, because we're the whole burner principles. What is your favorite burner principle?
Immediacy.
Why? That's an unusual one.
I love immediacy because it is so focused on the present, right? It's not about what is going to happen at Friday night at 7:00. It's not about all the preparation, which there's much going in. It's what's happening right now between you and me. What's happening in that moment? You know, you could be in any moment and looking around at all the sights and the sounds and that's where it's at. You're bringing your best gift in the moment, in any moment that you have an interaction with someone, right?
Yeah, that's good.
I love that.
Yeah, I like it. Well, that's very meditative practice of just focus and the now. So
yeah,
you know, you brought a lot more to it than I would initially. I kind of skip it, that's my, I tend to skip over that one.
Really?
Yeah. Not skip it, but favorite. I mean, just, it. I don't give it, I've never given it that much thought, so
what's
that's
what's your favorite?
Just acceptance, compassion, acceptance, radical acceptance.
Inclusion.
Right? Inclusion, yeah. Yes. Yeah, because that's really what makes it, in my mind, I think. There's so many different people coming together with different unique aspects of themselves that creates a salad, the party. It gives it life. So that's always been my favorite.
I love that one too. And I love it when I'm at a burn, and particularly Burning Man, because it's such a large pool of people. But I love it when I meet someone and I think, wow, I never would have guessed that they would come to an event like this or participate in an event like this.
That's part of the fun too, is bringing people, almost just to trip them a little bit.
Yeah.
There are some people that you bring some people because they need it, and maybe they're not ready for it. But it's like a vaccination or something. They get a little bit in them, and then they. It goes from there and it grows. So, they'll double back. What are universal human rights? What do you think we're each, what do we each deserve as a minimum as human beings on this earth?
My study of psychology is a little rusty, but really I think it goes back to our hierarchy of needs, right?
Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yes, which is... the rudimentary things like shelter, nourishment, and love. I think there are a lot of fine lines in there too, human touch. But universal rights, I guess they go beyond the hierarchy of needs. But I think it's...
everyone needs the basics just to get to the higher.
Yes.
So they can experience those higher human experiences, or that give life meaning beyond mere subsistence, I think.
So, right.
Yeah. Interesting. Let's go to the next page here. What is a fair society?
That would be a utopia. I don't think that I know of a fair society, right? Fair, where everybody gets what they deserve as a human. It's so funny that you ask this today, because I engaged in a conversation on Facebook just today about this, and I never really fully answered this question, but in short, there was a dog on the back of a flatbed truck, and somebody said, you should report them to the authorities. The police should be called. And, I guess I'm a little bit libertarian and a little bit socialist, but I'm like, we don't know. That dog maybe was raised on the back of that flatbed truck, and it's not going anywhere. You don't know that. You can't assume.
Right. Right.
And it's really not your business. So my comment was, somebody said, it's illegal to do that. And I said, I don't think it is illegal. Just like it's not illegal... to slap your kid in the face in the shopping cart at Walmart, but I certainly see it happen a lot. There are lots of things that seem horrible and unfair and they're not illegal. Anyway, I made that comment, and the woman responded, "So you just walked away and didn't say anything? You didn't report that child abuse that you witnessed?" And that's really interesting, you know? No, I didn't. I believe that that reality for that child is not what I would wish for any child, but it's also that child's reality. And it's probably not as harsh as it would be if it were my child receiving that, because the world it lives in is very different.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, I know.
It's unfair.
I know. I grew up getting, you know, spanked.
Oh, I did too.
Day, practically.
I did too.
I don't think there was a week in my life that I did not get a belt.
Same.
Right out in the open.
Oh, maybe that's why we turned out
until,
so good, Paul.
You know, until I was like 15 years old or something. And thinking back on it, it's weird because, you know, I don't think I ever spanked my kids. I spanked my son once and then never did it again.
Yes. Thinking, I think I did the same thing. I did it once. It felt horrible. And you probably didn't go get a belt. I don't know if you did. But, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, the whole burner thing. Where, you know, where do you draw the lines? We are very libertarian, very liberal, very willing to let people do what they do. Yeah, the whole, you know, cruelty thing. Yeah, it makes me cry. I don't know, you know, if I saw someone getting spanked like I was as a kid, would I, you know, maybe that's because I grew up that way. I probably would not immediately go call child services. I would probably say something now. I go, "Hey man, my dad did that all the whole time I was growing up." It doesn't work, you know. If your kid's smart enough to understand, if he's smart, he's either too young to understand what you're doing, in which case you're just beating somebody that doesn't understand, which is just cruel, or they do understand. If they do understand, then you can just talk to them,
right?
You know, or we try to reason with them or whatever. It's gotta be a better way, I think.
When did it ever make you feel remorseful for anything?
It just made me sneaky. I just remember being sneaky. It's like in fact, it was almost made it fun to be sneaky, because then you had like this punishment that was out there. You knew it wasn't gonna kill you. You knew it would hurt, so you didn't want to get in trouble. But I mean, my childhood was like Hogan's Heroes, you know, running around all over the place. The parents were the guards.
It never made me remorseful, but it made me feel feelings of hatred toward my parents. And as a parent, that's just, that's not what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad we're, as a society, mostly progressed through that. Maybe with the possible exception of Walmart.
Walmart. You're going to see the worst parenting at Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart will probably not be a sponsor of this podcast. Why, next question, why do we create art? Which is a huge thing in the burner communities. Why do we create art?
I think we create art to have expression of the feelings that we have. It's one modality for that. But it's also there for just enjoyment as well. And it's also there to look at, for other people to interpret their own, you know, it's kind of fun that way, right? It could be a healing tool for someone to create, but it could also be something someone else looks at and just has a profound experience with that means something completely different than it did to the creator.
Good answer.
Are there wrong answers?
Are there what?
Are there wrong answers?
No, there are no wrong answers.
My favorite kind of test.
You're passing already. So. Does time have a beginning or an end? See, we're getting really off into the trippy stuff here. So,
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where we began. I don't even know how I feel about that. There's so many possibilities.
What spiritual, you know, I mean, so that gets into some things, obviously. You know, what spiritual aspect? What spiritual things did you retain or change or create your own or find your own?
So where am I now?
Yeah, where are you now on the spiritual spectrum?
Well, I kind of go all over the place. I feel like I'm pretty firmly rooted now in agnosticism. But I also leave a lot of room for being completely wrong about any of it. And I'm okay in the not knowing. I'm not going to pretend to know because I don't need to. It doesn't change anything. You know, is there a higher power that's outside of ourselves? I don't think so.
That was a beautiful Unitarian book that I had. It was called Learning to Live in the Questions or Living in the Questions. And it was finding joy in the mystery of it all.
Yeah.
Which I found kind of inspirational from the Unitarian church.
Yeah, there. Definitely. I like the idea of magic. So I can't be so firmly planted in atheism where there's no room for magic at all. That doesn't fit with me, but I also am a skeptic and but there are things that I believed to be ridiculous 10 years ago that maybe now I feel like, oh, you know, well, that could be possible.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm really ambiguous with the answer to that, but I'm okay with that, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good position to be. There's no reason to falsely or just to accept anything, really.
Unless you're not allowed to question it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when you start blocking off the possible truth.
Yeah.
So, I would ask the second one. It's questions about the universe. Is the universe real, or is there only one universe? Which I think we kind of covered a little bit of that in the mystery of it all. You know, maybe there is, maybe there isn't.
Well, in terms of the universe, we actually have pictures to show us what the universe is, unless there's another meaning to universe.
Let's get into we'll get into some fun stuff.
Let's do it.
Because I know that you have a dog that you love and a couple of dogs that you love.
I do love dogs.
Do animals have souls? So that's not only an unusual, we'll have to define soul, I guess, now that we've kind of...
Right, I don't even
know. We have no idea what that means.
I don't even know if humans have souls, but I suspect they might.
In the musical sense, do animals have souls?
Absolutely. To no one is... I mean, they do in and as much as a human has a soul. And for me, the verdict's not really in on that. But they are more than
conscious being. Well, they're definitely you believe they're conscious beings with with feelings and knowledge and and love.
Yes. Oh my God, animals are powerful in my life.
Tell us about your special one.
My babies. Well, I do have one that I love him as if I birthed him. His name is Harper, and he's a wounded little creature. He came as a rescue from a puppy mill. And he's so wounded. And I got to be his savior, you know. And we have such a special relationship. And I think maybe it's because I was so wounded too. But I just decided the second part of his life would be so different from the first part. And so I thought I was doing him this great favor of, you know, just giving him everything he needed and love. But really, he's the one that did me the favor. And he shows me unconditional love like I've never experienced in my life. And that's powerful. I think if you are a pet owner, especially a dog owner, dogs, they give back more than cats. Sorry, Lisa.
Definitely.
They give back to you, and that unconditional love is a powerful thing. Our kids don't give that to us. Our spouses don't give that to us. You know, it's the dog. But yeah, that's my Harper. Shout out to Harper.
Unique traits, or when you think about yourself, how would you describe yourself?
So what makes me is a bunch of DNA, 23 strands, I believe. But I guess I am unique in the way I've always felt like I was a weirdo and that I didn't really fit in most normal settings. But I think maybe a lot of burners feel that way, which is why we've all found each other and we feel so at home together.
I've definitely sensed that and felt that. And then the acceptance is just amazing.
Yeah, the acceptance. Yeah. We can be ourselves. We can try on new hats and be somebody completely different. You can just, what other community can you do that in so radically and always be accepted? Nobody's going to look at you strange for, you know, as a man walking around in a dress.
Yep. Yes, definitely. I'm trying to think of the wildest, most extremes. Well, even Ben, that's the beauty of it. Not just thinking that that's, oh, can I do that? It's thinking, I'm going to wear a fabulous dress and finding the most fabulous dress that you can find.
Right.
And taking it to the extreme. Why tiptoe? Don't just tiptoe in the pond.
Right. In fact,
a running leap.
You know, kind of back to my snake bite story, I forgot earlier in that day I had been sprayed green by somebody at the lake. And I was laying next to the lake and someone came up. They had been painting people green and they asked if they could paint me green. I said, sure. I mean, the name of our camp that year was the Lounge Lizards. And I was painted green from head to toe.
Total reptile mode.
Yeah. And I got most of it off of me before that evening, but my hair, my nails, and parts of me were still green. That was hard to explain at the hospital, you know? They're trying to do cap refill on my fingernails and nothing's showing, and I'm like, I'm fine. I'm really fine. I was just painted green earlier today. What do they do with that information?
You made their day because they had a great story to go home and tell. This lady came in, painted green, hit on the butt by a snake.
She was on mushrooms.
On mushrooms. Only to burn. What is beauty?
Beauty. I think beauty is something that causes you to have awe. I just read a study recently that people that experience awe more often are healthier and they get over things easier. It's a good treatment for PTSD. And I feel like I think I'm just lucky. I find awe a lot, you know. And I don't know, why is that? Is it my DNA? Is it just my curiosity? But I'm in awe a lot of the time. You know, I don't have to be entertained. It doesn't take much to entertain me, you know. Like the lizards that are everywhere here in Florida, I'm in awe of them all the time. I caught one yesterday. It was about an inch long. It was the most amazing tiny thing.
Tiny living creature.
Yeah, and, you know, it's important to be moved to awe. We've probably all experienced it, hopefully, where you see beauty to the point where tears start coming down your face. A few years ago, my husband and I went to the Teton National Park, and we were walking around the lake, Jenny Lake, and I just came around this corner, and for aspens that were just full on gold, and there were some red flowers and the lake and the jagged mountains. And it was so overwhelming, the sheer beauty. I couldn't even take another step. It like brings tears to my eyes remembering that powerful moment, and tears just streaming down my face at that awe, you know. I think that stuff is, that's the juicy bits right there.
That is. That's awesome. That's what it's all about. So what do you foresee for the future? What do you envision the future will be like?
For the earth, for humankind, what?
All. And yourself, all three.
Huh. Well, I don't think it's looking very good for humankind. But
slippery slope here.
I do feel like the earth will purge itself of us eventually and heal itself. I do have mad respect for my daughter who has decided she doesn't want to have kids because of the state of our planet. But then I think, wow, she and her husband are the kind of people that would raise the most amazing, intelligent beings that could probably solve some of the problems of our planet, but it also could be too late. And I really do respect that decision. For humankind, I think it's really a mixed bag right now, but I want to say love will win.
Yeah, I do wish that people who I wish should have kids and should do it anyway. I think people tend to, when we're faced with problems, we tend to figure out ways to overcome them. And so it's good to have people who can overcome them or who are likely to overcome them or, you know, to be in there. You don't want anyone to suffer. And I would not blame anyone for choosing not to have kids because in many cases it impairs your own ability to try to make the world a better place or to do the things you need to do when you've got children to take care of. It's hard to care for other people
in right.
situations. So that's interesting. So let's the last question. What is love?
What is love? That seems like it should be such an easy question to answer, right? But love is so many things. Love is that unconditional puppy wagging its tail at you when you walk in the door. Love is sacrificing so that your children can have what you would like them to have. Love is that connection that you feel with friends and sometimes family.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
Between the spankings.
Right. Love is feeling. It's a feeling. Right?
And a good one.
Yeah. It's funny. It's a noun. It's a verb. It's an adverb. I guess I would go with really more than anything, it's connection.
Couldn't agree more. Well, do you want to add anything else that the world should know?
A conversation, you know? If I am introduced to you, you know that I would love to get to know you. So many times we're passing each other in a quick party setting and you don't get to have that conversation where you get to the next level in a, you know, knowing someone. So I appreciate this. I think this is fun. But if I could just say one thing, it would be to encourage people to reach out to others and not be afraid to ask someone about themselves. So good job, Paul. You're doing
Thank you. You're doing it. Yeah.
I think it's really important that we do that. We take the time to get to know someone, to hear their stories. Because when you do that, boundaries come down, and it's just a good way to chip away at walls and realize that we're all more alike than we're not. We have the same desires in life.
Couldn't agree more. Very good. Well, that ends another episode of Better Know a Burner. Thank you for joining me today. That was awesome.
That was fun. And you know what? There's a song. So I noticed you had music. And there is a song that is so me.
Oh, good.
That,
like, we're gonna add this to the end of this.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that'd be perfect.
So tell me why the song is why it is the song of the you song.
Well, because of the words, and they, like, when I listened to Noni's thing, I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna send Noni this song. She has to hear it. So, for people that feel different from everybody else, you know, they feel like, I don't really fit into most scenes, or, you know, you feel different, it's the song for that.
Okay, great. All right, can't wait to hear it. We will, I'll tack that on.
I'll text it to you. And there are multiple verses, and the part that I really like is in the end where it says, I can't do it out of context like that, but I'll send it to you. You have to listen to it. I bet you'll really like this song too.